Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Thank you, Domati, for being here, and thank you for that news. We don't need Lou, and we don't need Joe Brand, and we don't need Ernie in production, and Marlene, and all those people. We'll just do the show right here from our little old station and our little old Tribune Tower all by ourselves.
Yeah, who cares if they get coffee and snacks and treats
and
stuff?
I checked out the beginning of Lou's show, and they've got hot breakfast there, and lots of folks. Lou's remotes are very popular, as you can tell, both with the staff and the listeners. So kudos to you guys. Another job well done out there. So here we are in the Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue once again. And White Sox baseball will once again be on WGN Radio tomorrow. I believe it's 2 o'clock, the first pitch. They're playing, as you said, exhibition baseball today, and then they go at it again on the radio tomorrow. We broadcast that first game when I was thinking medium-sized thoughts yesterday. Sox got off to a good start, and then they didn't, but it's exhibition baseball. Nobody's worried about that. Frankly, folks don't think the Sox are going to be a band beater this year anyway, but here's what I liked yesterday and what I'm looking forward to tomorrow. Having the radio on, hearing the crack of a bat, the cheer of a crowd, and warm, sunny chatter. Warm, sunny chatter about baseball. That's what you had yesterday. That's what you'll get tomorrow, too. You know, we were talking yesterday about some fun things that we can do as a radio show. This past Thursday, was it Thursday night or Wednesday night? I think it was Thursday night. I met with a bunch of listeners at the David Hochberg Pearl Mortgage Suite at the Bulls game. It was sort of a spontaneous pop-up thing. We just said, hey, if you want to do something fun with us, let us know, and we'll tell you when, you know, the day of or something like that. We'll all just go do something crazy. A lot of people signed up. We randomly picked about 10 of you, and we were up in the suite eating and drinking and watching a really exciting Bulls game. And we said, okay, that was fun. What else can we do just to party with you listeners from the John Williams side? And people were calling in with fun experiences. Somebody said, let's go curling. Somebody said, let's do one of those. In fact, Violetta said, I want to do the paint and wine thing. Let's all just meet somewhere, and we'll drink wine, and we'll paint badly. One of our texters said, let's play beach volleyball at Montrose. I drive by that all the time. It always looks fun. I've always wanted to do that. I think we will one day this summer. Say, okay, after the show or some Saturday, if you want to play beach volleyball, GN listeners, let's go. We're going to go do that. Let's go go-karting was a suggestion from one of our listeners, and I think that sounds like a blast. Not bumper cars, go-karting. We'll just get to one of those tracks. I don't know exactly how we're going to do it. Maybe we'll have brackets and we'll have a race, see who's the best one. I'm not sure how that works, but it just sounds like fun to me. In fact, Pete McMurray sent me a text as we were talking about this, and he said, you know, it would be really fun because he knows I love table tennis. Table tennis. He said, go to that place, Spin, downtown. They've got a bar, they've got food, they've got games, and it's a place to go play ping pong. And I thought that would be a lot of fun if we just a bunch of us said, okay, we are going to own that joint for a couple of hours, one Saturday afternoon, or maybe some evening after work, and maybe we'll do a tournament there, maybe not, but we'll just play ping pong. And then somebody said, well, let's tailgate at a White Sox game. And I haven't tailgated at a Cubs game. You can't do that. I think you can at a White Sox game. And I think that would be, I think we absolutely need to do that. We'll put up a tent. We'll have some brats. We'll get some beers. We'll get some bags. I don't know what all you do when you tailgate at a White Sox game, but those seem to be three good ideas to me right there. Here's what you can do for me today, 312-981-7200. If there's some other shared experience you want us to have, somebody said, well, why don't we all take a group tour of the Field Museum? Okay, we can do that. But you know, it's sort of like...
Seems harsh.
I know, doesn't it though? Because actually, I think that does sound like fun.
I was just there.
You were at the field?
Yeah, the Greek, Roman, Etruscan, Egyptian exhibit.
Oh, yeah, okay, really good time.
How dare you? My friend Tori worked on it, and it was wonderful.
Oh, pardon me. That's right. I know well, your friend you get, is a curator.
When you get the personal tour from an employee, it's not bad either.
It was a little special.
I'm kind of partial to the poor painting thing. Like, I always want to sip wine and paint bad paintings. Yeah. I don't know why. I don't know. And I get upset when I see people go to these things and pour back these masterpieces. And I'm like, how did you do that?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, how did you do that?
I think they cheated.
Painting with Domati.
There we go.
Hey, so, Doe, I think we do need some people to take the point on these. So if we do a painting and beverage thing, you would be the lead guy on that one?
Gladly. Seriously, I am down.
I don't know if I need to repeat this story, but we said, well, what are you going to paint? And immediately I thought of a nude subject. And I don't, again, need to repeat this, but a member of the staff here at WGN Radio has a family member who has worked as a nude model for painting classes.
John, you said you wouldn't talk about this in the air.
Yeah, a family member. Finger quotes.
No names. And by the way, they are not in the studio or on the air right now. So we'll leave it at that. But okay, so 312-981-7200. Text to me if you have any brilliant suggestions or ideas, something you'd like to do with us and who might take the lead on it. But we'll definitely tailgate at a Sox game with you. I don't know how we're going to avoid playing table tennis at that spin place. Griff, doesn't that sound like a lot of fun? You want to go play some ping pong with some folks?
Sure.
Yeah, that wasn't exactly what I thought I'd get from you.
Sounds good.
Whatever your suggestion is, we are open to it. It's 10:15. Different subject, serious subject now for just a second. Everybody is talking about what happened this week and the conversation that has ensued. Those remarkable listening sessions that the president had and also that Marco Rubio and others had where they were on a stage. People were talking about what to do with gun laws and making schools safe in this country. The president has said that he's open to some changes and suggestions. But I think that if we're going to talk about safety in the schools, particularly if part of the solution is arming the teachers, and that is something that I can't get my head around, I think the people that need to sound off on this are the teachers themselves. And when it came up this week, it dawned on us, I'm on the air weekdays from 1 to 3, that the teachers were in school. If you are a teacher, I know that everybody's been talking about this a lot, but the teachers have been in school when I've been on the air. So I just wanted to take a handful of calls here from you, a teacher. If you teach in a elementary, grade school, junior high, high school, I'd like you to call 312-981-7200 right now and just give me your reaction to that. Maybe you guys think the schools will be safer if some of you are packing, or maybe that terrifies you. I suspect you're one or the other. I don't think there's much neutral ground on this. My number is 312-981-7200. I'm going to take a break. During the commercial break, Griffin will screen your calls. And let's just leave this segment for teachers. If you are a teacher and you're 23 or you're 63, I don't know how old teachers are, call me and tell me what you think of you all being the ones to carry the guns, because we've already entrusted to you the education of our kids. Now we are going to entrust to you the safety of our kids, to you, the teachers. At least that's one of the ideas being floated, right? So what do you think about that? Incidentally, the NRA's stature in this country seems to have fallen a little bit this week just because of this. After that CPAC performance by their spokesperson, Dana Latch, and then Wayne LaPierre, the president, you know, I guess those two are known for that sort of strident language, but I don't think we've always paid as close attention to what they say or how they say it as we did this week, the NRA's top brass. And now I see on Thursday, the First National Bank of Omaha pledged to stop issuing an NRA-branded Visa card. A bank spokesperson said customer feedback prompted a review of its partnership with the NRA, and it has chosen not to renew its current contract. I'm reading from CNN.money.com. Enterprise Holdings, Enterprise Rent-A-Car, Alamo, and National Car Rental Companies have announced that they will end their discount deals that they've had with the NRA. Hertz said in a tweet, it's ending its NRA rental car discount program. Avis and Budget said they're ending their partnership with the NRA. A spokesperson for the Moving Van Lines Allied and North American companies said Friday, quote, the brands will no longer have an affiliate relationship with the NRA, effective immediately. MetLife, the insurance giant, said Friday it's ending its discounts on home and auto insurance for the NRA. Symantec, the people that make Norton antivirus software, have a discount program with the NRA that will end. SimpliSafe Home Security Systems are ending their NRA affiliation. The news comes after the hashtag boycott the NRA is sort of taken over on social media. Chubb, the insurer, and Wyndham Hotels are ending discount programs or partnerships with the NRA as well, although those had already been in the works before the shooting. Teachers, what do you say next? Thanks for your text. Keep them coming. 312-981-7200. Fun things you think we should do with the show. You, the WGN listener, me, the John Williams radio host, Griffin, the producer, maybe LFR Monday through Friday producer, Violetta, Domati. I just got a text message from Pete McMurray. It was his idea, Pete's was, that we all get together and play ping pong one afternoon and drink some adult beverages, or maybe not. You don't have to be drinking. But I said, Pete, you need to take the lead on this. And Pete hasn't got back to me yet, but I'm sure he will. And I'm sure he's going to say, yes, that's a great idea, John. And I'll be the point person. And I'll come too, me, John Williams. And Pete and I will let you whoop our butts in some table tennis there. It's the Bulls versus Butler, round two. The Bulls take on Jimmy and the Timberwolves tonight at 7:30 on WGN TV Sports. This commercial written before, I think I heard this morning, Joe Brand say that Jimmy Butler is not expected to play in that game tonight. I believe Zach LaVine is. And boy, what a shootout the two of them had. That was a fun game when they played at the UC. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines. I'm asking teachers to tell me what they think of guns in the classroom, and they being the ones that would hold them. April, you go first. You're on the air. What do you want to say?
Yeah, just a real quick scenario about my day yesterday. I work in a kindergarten through 12 building, which means we have high schoolers who are capable of what happened last week. And we had a soft lockdown for something, and I'm thinking of my third graders, and okay, here's my plan just in case something happens. Here's plan A, here's plan B, here's plan C. While I'm also getting cruel messages from a parent. Now Trump wants me to get a gun, and in the afternoon I had training on getting my second master's, and you want someone who does not know how to shoot any weapon to learn how and then be a soldier and protect a little group of kids. I'm not capable of doing that. I just am not capable of doing that. I want the people who take care of the kids, the parents and everybody, to start taking care of their kids and raising their kids so they know right from wrong, so I don't have to teach them to say please and thank you as 8-year-olds. It's just getting too much. And then I get a raise if I will get a gun. You don't want to give me a raise because I'm a good teacher. So that's my rant.
No, that's why I asked, April. I want to hear you, and I can hear the emotion in your voice, too. I appreciate your call. Thanks for jumping in here. I'm going to go from you to Heather next. You're on WGN. Heather, say what you want to say. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm Heather, and I'm a teacher, of course, for 20 years, but I've grown up in a house with guns. Like, my all the men hunt, but we grew up with, like, serious rules, you know, like everything's locked up in a safe. So I've always respected that. I've never been scared. I will tell you, as an educator, the way the world is, the pressure we already have about data and how the kids are doing academically is one thing, but now the pressure of this. My friends and I are like, this week we were talking and we were like, the pressure of putting a gun in someone's hands in a class, in a school, never. I mean, the thought of, like, even though I grew up with guns, I would be terrified to make the mistake of, like, shooting the wrong person or, and God forbid, harming another child. So this is just ridiculous to any educator that I know.
Heather, thanks for the call. I know some of you are saying, well, then Heather shouldn't be the one with the gun. April shouldn't be the one with the gun. The president said 40%, 20%, maybe 10% of the teachers would be armed. He also imagined that a lot of the teachers are former members of the Marines or the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, the Coast Guard, or cops, that they'll be the ones that will be teaching and they'll all be really good with guns. My dad was a career Air Force officer. I don't know that he handled the gun much, and I don't know how many members of the service have retired and are now teaching in grade schools. I talked to the vice president of the Chicago Teachers Union. He said 85% of the Chicago public school teachers are women, and anecdotally, he hasn't done a survey, but he doesn't know of many members of the service who are now teaching in the classrooms. I'm going to Eric. You're on WGN. Eric, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Some of my points were already mentioned by others about I would not want to be the one responsible for harming a student and having that label or what would clearly be an accountability put on me for killing a student. But I feel like if there's a budget that's going to get these weapons in schools, these firearms in schools, keep them secure until they're needed, pay for them, that money can be going towards funding food for breakfasts, for lunches, for kids who need it, and provide counseling for kids before they reach the stage that they actually would come into a school or anyone would come into a school and be a risk. Something has to be done for these kids before they reach that point.
Eric, thanks for the call. I'm going from you to Donna. You're on WGN. Donna, what do you want to say?
I'm 81 years old. I'm a retired teacher. There is no way I've ever taught with anyone that should be carrying a gun. Know what I want my children in a classroom carrying a gun. The only reason I voted for Trump, one reason, I didn't want Hillary. I'm disgusted with what he says, but no guns in a school. If they want to hire an extra policeman, fine. Even that doesn't work. I'm just disgusted with the whole situation.
I appreciate your call. Vienna, you're my last call on this today, but not my last call on it ever. Vienna, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm a third grade teacher, and in no way, shape, or form would I ever work in a building with teachers carrying guns. As one of the callers earlier said, we are under tremendous stress where it comes to data. We're implementing in our district alone a new proficiency grading scale. We're implementing personalized learning. We have PBIS for a behavior protocol, and I am not trained to do that. My job as a teacher is to keep my students safe. I could never shoot another person, a child. I would in a crisis situation, it would be my job to ensure that those kids are safe and get them out or hidden so that they wouldn't be harmed. Now they're saying three officers in Parkland couldn't even follow protocol. My husband's a first responder. With all the training that you go through to even be a first responder in a crisis situation, you react automatically. The adrenaline's pumping. No way should teachers have guns. Our jobs are to teach. Let someone else take care of that. And I know the caller right before me also mentioned behavior. We live in a situation where kids just constantly are not held responsible for their actions. In our district, we just keep tally marks on kids. The other thing is that you have kids in elementary school who have been behavior issues since day one, and when they move on to middle school, all of that information is dumped. So that information does not travel with them from elementary to middle school to high school, and that's a problem.
Yeah, boy, the stuff we're learning this week. Vienna, thanks for the call. Thanks for being a teacher. Keep doing what you do, and we'll continue to follow this story. It's 10:31. Okay, and by the way, that was the first six calls that came in. We weren't screening them for content. Griff said, just take them as they come, and we did. We'll take the news next. That's on WGN. Thank you, Domiti. It's 10:41. John Williams on WGN Radio. Two things I want to do in this half hour. One is welcome a sponsor to WGN Radio, at least to the John Williams Show, and tell you about a really great thing that is going on today. This is the kind of day that you're starting to think about spring. You're starting to think about your house, your windows, your doors, the sort of thing that Lou Manfredini would be talking to you about. I want to introduce you to one of my new sponsors, and that's the folks at Next Door and Window, and how you can take advantage of their open houses. noises. We'll do that after 10:50. Give me a few minutes right now to talk to the film critic for the Chicago Tribune, Michael Phillips. And Michael, I'm angry already. Do you know why?
Does it have something to do with this list we're going to talk about?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Well, let's explain what this list is. As part of the Illinois Bicentennial, and this is sort of a work through the Lincoln Museum down in Springfield. They're coming up with something called the top 200 for Illinois. Top entertainers, athletes, books, movies, and they're starting with this movie list. And they're working from a short list of 18 that they came up with. And we're all the public, the unwashed public, are invited to vote in the online poll. Which is the greatest Illinois movie? A movie either set and or filmed here in Illinois, Chicago, or environs.
Right. Yeah. So on
well,
this
you're,
website,
you're mad. You're
well,
mad.
So but they didn't give me 100 movies to choose from. They gave me about 20, right?
Yeah, about 18. Yeah,
18. Okay, and the list are A League of Their Own, Barbershop, His Girl Friday, Hoop Dreams, The Fugitive, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Medium Cool, Young Mr. Lincoln, In the Heat of the Night, Ordinary People, Blues Brothers, Chicago, His New Job, The Untouchables, Eight Men Out, Call Northside 777. Those are the movies that Illinois is going to allow one of them to be our quintessential film. First,
our top film.
I resent the stipulation. This is ridiculous. Not one of these movies can be Illinois' movie. If it had to be one, I guess it would be Blues Brothers, but that's a Chicago movie. Is it an Illinois movie? And some of the great movies about Illinois are not on this list.
This is what I've been hearing from ever since I wrote the column on this for the Tribune this week, John. I've been hearing from so many people saying, how could they possibly leave off? You name it. A Road to Perdition, Risky Business, My Bodyguard, Mickey One. I never heard anybody come out in favor of that cockamamie Warren Beatty film from 1965, Mickey One. But there it was. What's the one that you're really cheesed off about that wasn't on the list?
I think High Fidelity should be on there.
High Fidelity, I've heard from people on that too.
I think About Last Night is a stupid movie, but I think it's a really great Chicago movie and some great Chicagoans are in there.
Cooley High.
Vacation isn't on this list. Good grief. If we had to pick one, I would pick Christmas Vacation.
Really? Yeah. Well, you'd fit my. You know, but that's a favorite of a lot of people's.
It's a Chicago movie.
I will say this too, John. You get a movie like the musical version of Chicago, which won Best Picture back in 2002. That film was filmed in Toronto, and so that for me that comes with a huge asterisk. just like it's set here but shot in Chicago.
Well, is it a movie about the city or is it a movie that was made in the States?
Well, it's both, right? So it's both. And this is why you have the presence of a title like another Best Picture Oscar winner, In the Heat of the Night, which is, of course, the most Mississippi of all movies, but it was shot in Sparta,
okay,
Illinois, downstate, as opposed to and set in the fictional Sparta, Mississippi. So, that gets by on a technicality.
Okay, all right.
So
these 18 movies then, Hoop Dreams, Ferris Bueller's Day Off would probably be the winner, but you said let's exclude that because that's where we will all go. What else would you recommend be in the top three, say?
Yeah, Hoop Dreams, Call Northside 77, which if people don't remember that, it's James Stewart as the reporter who solves the cold case murder. And that was an early film shot almost entirely on location in Chicago back in 1948. So that to me, that's a real strong one. And
Ordinary People, Ordinary People, Ordinary People.
You go Ordinary People.
Griffin, if we're doing the top three, Griff, what is one of yours that has to be in there?
I really love The Breakup with Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn.
Not on the list of 18, though, that we're choosing from.
I love that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So you are that guy, Griffin. You're that guy. You're the Vince Vaughn guy who's got to be dragged into
adulthood. That is my only complaint about The Breakup, is that Vince Vaughn is too much of a schlub. It's too easy to blame everything on him. Otherwise, it works perfectly. A lot of people don't think it's very funny, and it's true. It's actually a very good drama, I think.
Yeah.
Like, And that's what confuses people about it. I love that movie.
The Untouchables. Michael, you got to put The Untouchables in there.
There's stuff I just love in The Untouchables. You know why? Because there's scenes they shot down on LaSalle Street, down by the Board of Trade, where they made us believe we were back in the early 30s in the old-fashioned way. This is pre-digital, because that was in the 80s, that film. And all they did was spend a lot of money and got a lot of great old cars and like 100 extras. And there's just a simple shot of them just walking in to do a bust, on one of the in a building on LaSalle Street. And it's just a great 8-second shot where that makes me think, you know, I love that street and I love the city. You know, and Sean Connery, you know, he can be in my movie anytime. You know what I'm saying?
Well, so I asked you for three, and you gave me Call Northside 77.
Yep. Yeah, that one. And I would go, in addition to that, Hoop Dreams. I think it's great that it's the one documentary on this list. I'd probably also go, I'd probably have to go The Sting. You know, I mean, the 12-year-old me, you know, who saw that film, I don't know how many times, that's a great mixture of actual Chicago locations and pure Hollywood fabrication. And I think that's the movies anyway, you know, a little bit of truth, a little bit of lies.
The Sting with Paul Newman and Robert Redford, right?
Yeah. Yep. So sentimentally, I go The Sting, but. You know, I also love to see. I love how Medium Cool, the film Haskell Wexler made back in '69, you know, uses all the events of '68. You know, the convention and the riots. You know, I love how he uses that. You know, one of the darkest moments in the city's history for a pretty, even now, a pretty exciting, you know, sort of semi-documentary, semi-fictional. Look at what's going on with the city back then. Yeah, I you know what? Scratch that. Scratch The Sting. The Sting is dead to me. Medium cool.
This is what I've been doing. And then I look at another one and go, wait a minute. How is it that While You Were Sleeping or Transformers 2 or Wayne's World isn't on this list, for crying out loud? I'm still mad at the movies that aren't on there, let alone the ones that are. So.
You know what I love about the Transformers franchise? No. It really is the only thing I love about the Transformers franchise, is that they actually managed to, I think, if you look at the two films that were explicitly set and photographed a little bit in Chicago, they've actually managed to destroy the Tribune Tower twice. You know, they destroy it in one movie, and then it's rebuilt very quickly in time to be destroyed in the next film. So what do they have against the Tribune Tower, you know? I mean...
I'm going to miss this place. I'm going to miss this place.
Yeah, same, man, same.
Hey, listen, before I let you go, just give me some wisdom on the Black Panther. How well is it doing? How well is it resonating? Is it crossing lines?
Yeah,
talk just briefly about
that. It sure is. You know what I love about it? And there are, unlike the Transformers franchise, there's a hell of a lot of things I love about Black Panther. But, hey, it's just really good. It's the best Marvel superhero movie, you know, probably hands down. It's going to make $1 billion worldwide. Therefore, throwing in the dustbin the idea that, African-American movie won't make money overseas. You know, a movie with a largely African-American cast. Well, to hell with that idea. Yeah. And this one's going to do it. In the opening few days, the audience here in North America was almost split down the middle between females and males. I think that's great. That's another indication that there's something a little bit different about this comic book derived movie. And I don't know. I really had a great time with that film, and I'm really pleased that it's finding a really rich, diverse audience. You know, it works for everybody.
What jumped out at you, Griff, when you saw the movie? I haven't seen it yet.
Well, I love Coogler's previous two movies, and it's kind of annoying to see directors that you love get franchised off into big corporate movies that you wonder if they're going to be able to make their mark on, and that's kind of what happened to him with Creed, but I felt like he did in a way that nobody has been able to with Marvel yet, and that's why their movies have bothered me, and this one did not.
I agree. Yeah. Very well put. I really hope that Coogler has one of those careers that allows him to toggle back and forth between movies that he's now going to be in line for, because this is going to be a $1 billion movie, and the movies that are, you know, smaller, more interesting, a little riskier.
Oh, I never thought about this. So you guys are worried that based on the success of this, he's going to be that guy now, and you want him to still make movies like Creed or something else, huh?
Well, both. I mean, he's a great... Somebody's made it a... It's a little early to make comparisons to Spielberg, I think, but... Griffin's absolutely right. He's made three really good movies in a row. They're all very different. Two of them happen to be, you know, kind of like franchise or franchise adjacent, but they didn't feel like it. And that's one of the, I think that's the secret of Black Panther. I've never seen a Marvel movie that cared less about the other Marvel movies.
Amen. Hooray. Read Michael Phillips in the Chicago Tribune. You can read him at chicagotribune.com. What's your backslash, Michael, if I just want to go directly to you?
You have to go to chicagotribune.com/movies.
Movies.
You can also follow me on Twitter at Phillips Tribune.
And if you want to participate in this ridiculous list that the state of Illinois has, go to IllinoisTop200.com, IllinoisTop200.com.
You got it.
Hey, really appreciate your time, Michael. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, what a pleasure. It's 10:52. Okay, hey, listen, what are you doing today? I've got a real good idea for something for you to do in a minute. Thank you, Domati. This is John Williams. It's 11:10. So think about that. Tomorrow, sunshine and 46. If the opening day of Cubs or White Sox baseball is that nice, we'll be glad. Sunny and 46. Tomorrow, White Sox baseball once again here on WGN Radio. So if you want a little warm weather, sunshine, and baseball chatter in your world, and we sure do, the Sox are on GN now, and we're broadcasting some of the preseason games. We'll do a game this coming Tuesday, and we'll do the game tomorrow, Sunday, here on WGN. We record on Thursdays a podcast we call The Mincing Rascals. I don't know how many podcasts you listen to. More folks still don't than do, but I think you would enjoy the habit if you'd get into it. Wherever you listen to podcasts, search for The Mincing Rascals. You can also hear the podcast at WGNradio.com and WGN Plus. But anyway, we record it on Thursdays and broadcast just part of it here on our Saturday show. It's always with Eric Zorn, the Chicago Tribune columnist. This week, Kristen McQuarrie, editorial writer, joins us, and Steve Bertrand, too. I'll just play part of it. We'll pick it up where we had just discussed maybe this latest terrible school shooting in Florida will lead to a tipping point in gun laws or attitudes about guns in this country. And then from there, we talked about some local things. Mike Madigan, the House Speaker. Allegations of harassment are swirling not at but around Madigan, and that's where we pick up the conversation. In the Chicago Tribune, different topic now, cartoonist Scott Stantis drew a Me Too tornado blowing over Mike Madigan. Now there are two allegations of men close to the speaker harassing women in Springfield. His knock-it-off attitude doesn't seem to have worked, and his desire to have his own counsel oversee an investigation hardly makes this feel independent. So here we go again this week, guys. Will this be the time that the tide turns against the speaker? Will he step down?
This is the thematic question, because the first whole segment we did was on, is this a tipping point, a turning point, and you're asking the same question about Madigan. Is this a turning point? Of course, we don't know the answer, but it does seem to me, and I wrote a column on this last week, that Mike Madigan, no matter what you think of what he's done or his policies or anything like that, is clearly a millstone around the Democrats' neck. They're all arguing about who's got the most distance from Mike Madigan. That's a crazy position to have for someone who is the Speaker of the House and the leader of your party in the state, that everybody can't get far enough away from him or is embarrassed about how close they are to him.
Gee, who does that sound like? So what happens then, Eric?
He's 75 years old, I think. I think he should say, I've had a nice long
run
here.
Yeah,
I'm going to step down. I actually don't think that this particular These two Me Too cases are sufficient on their own to cause him to have to step down.
He's never going to step down, and he's especially not going to step down when he's being thrown under the bus. His ego is way too fragile for that. Fragile. Maybe that mean the opposite. The only way to get rid of Speaker Madigan is to have Republicans win a majority of seats in the Illinois House. End story. End stop. That's it.
Okay, here's another local story. If WGN Radio or the Chicago Tribune gets the names of the fans who chanted basketball at a black player for the Capitals last week, should we out them? If we there were four fans at a Blackhawks game, they're playing the Capitals. Capitals have an African-American on their team. He's in the penalty box. The people right around him start chanting basketball, basketball, basketball. If we find out who those people are, and the Blackhawks have said we've intervened, those people will never be allowed to attend a Blackhawks game again. Should we tell people who those people are? Your colleague, Stephen Rosenblum, on the sports page of the Tribune, really wants to know who these people are. He wants them to suffer the sort of humiliation that maybe this guy did.
I'm surprised that they haven't been identified, right? Because at least two of them, you can see pretty clearly who they are. Does the media have the responsibility of outing them?
I'm not saying we have the responsibility to find them, but suppose it fell in your lap.
What's the public interest in?
I don't think there is any. I quite disagree with Steve Rosenblum. I don't think they should out those people.
I think there's a risk to outing them. I think you end up, if you publish their names and people find them and commit violence against them, they haven't been charged with a crime. Yeah, what they did was pretty rotten.
Who outed Steve Bartman? How did we come to know his name?
Well, the way it was written this week, because it came up, was that we knew it from the Cubs. But I don't know that the Cubs are the first ones to say that. Mm-hmm. Boy, I don't know how we first found out Steve Bartman. It's amazing we don't know who these four people are. You know their friends know who they are. You know their enemies kind of know who they are. There must be somebody that doesn't like them in the family or at work that would love to see them get busted, but it hasn't happened. If the Blackhawks, though, found out and released those names and then somebody sought vengeance on them, I think that's on the Blackhawks then, and I don't think they should or want any part of that.
There is some responsibility in the media to say, okay, what as Steve says, what's the public interest in knowing these individuals? Are we saying that these are the only racists in Chicago?
Punishment.
Are we at risk of them chanting again? I mean, is that what it is? You know, they've been punished.
Right, that's what somebody said. I'm just reading my text line this week. Well, that'll teach the next guy. It's funny, too, because a lot of people were questioning the depth of the slur, basketball.
Right, they're like the gang who can't shoot straight. I mean, I think if they wanted to be offensive and banned for life, they could have picked a better chance.
Well, they thought they were being clever. They were having their cake and eating it. But I think the import of that is pretty clear.
Oh, absolutely clear.
I'm not worried about what they said. It was what they meant. This is Robin Baumgarten of WGN-TV talking to a Muslim fashion blogger. Are you guys up to speed on this story? They do one of these sit-down chit-chats with a woman. I'm not saying that this was an inappropriate or silly interview, but I think it was the interview they didn't intend for it to be. And that is, she sits down, and the conversation ostensibly is going to be about the message of the hijab and how it is received.
Some of our viewers may say, we cannot trust Iran.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
I mean, I don't think we can trust this country. I mean, what has this country done to the majority of the countries in the Middle East? You know, like, I don't think Iran's having nuclear weapons. I'm a pacifist. I don't believe in violence. A lot of these weapons in the Middle East are completely brought in by the United States.
A lot of Americans might take offense to that. You're an American. You don't sound like an American when you say that, you know what
That's
I mean?
That's because I've read, you know, and I think that it's really important that we look beyond sort of these really simple narratives that we're told.
So I found out about that when I got a tweet from an Irish cousin of mine working in Dubai. I mean, this thing is taken
it's
off around
seen
the world.
10 million times more around the world.
And I think it's completely misunderstood.
The line that's getting traction is,
a lot of Americans might take offense to that. You're an American. You don't sound like an American when you say that. You know what I mean?
That's because I've read.
You don't sound like an American.
But if you listen, you know, you've done these interviews. I've seen you. I've done these interviews where you sit down and you think it's something else.
Yeah.
Like you said, this was going to be a cute blogger about fashion. And they sat down, Robin and Larry, and I'm assuming, and it wasn't what they expected. You could even tell I know Larry, but one of the questions he asked, you know, it sounded like he was reaching, trying to figure out what to say next.
Yes. The lady would say one very strident and brilliant, but very opinionated thing. And then they would just ask, they didn't even engage, because if you got drawn into this conversation, suddenly you're having this geopolitical conversation about America's treatment of Muslims, and that's not what they wanted to do.
And so Robin said, you know, you're an American. She said, you're an American. Your friends are American. You don't sound American. What do you say to them? That's not an altogether unfair question, although the words might have been.
I think just the way you say you don't sound American, it's very American to criticize the government.
She was just trying to say that you're being critical opponents might take offense to that. What is your response? She slipped up. She didn't mean to say that you can't criticize your government, because I agree with you, Eric. I think criticizing government and being aware of our intervention in a lot of these Middle East conflicts is extremely American. Okay, so she's probably getting beat up.
Pro-American. You don't sound very pro-American.
You don't sound very patriotic. Yes. You're being critical of the government.
Days, isn't it?
You know, the offensive thing was then when Robin said that, the blogger said, well, that's because I read.
There's memes about that.
Should we be outraged about that? She doesn't sound American because she reads?
Let's not be offended at Robin. Let's not be offended at their guests.
No, I came in here to be offended by someone.
Well, then tackle this. The Reader newspaper here in Chicago hired Pulitzer Prize winner Mark Kunkel as its editor. And the first edition under him featured a pinstripe J.B. Pritzker sitting on a black lawn jockey. Is that J.B. taking the black vote for granted? Or is it that blacks don't think for themselves? They'll prop up the billionaire no matter what. It cost him his job, Kunkel, after one issue.
Well, I thought that the cartoon was a swing and a miss because it was so ambiguous. It had both those interpretations. I saw it the first way that you described it, which was that this is how the cartoonist or the reader was saying this is how J.B. Pritzker sees black voters. But other people said that the reader was saying black voters who continue to support J.B. Pritzker are lawn jockey blacks there, which is another way of saying Uncle Tom, which is another way of saying like servile and so on. And, you know, I mean, that interpretation is offensive. Certainly some black politicians took offense at it. A lot of people in social media took offense at it. It was a mistake. Now, I happen to think that there's a whole sort of constellation of issues surrounding the hiring of Kunkel to take over the Reader and the way the staff had reacted to that contributed to the fact that this became a firing offense rather than a reprimand.
Well, was it the official Reader tweet that said, ding dong, the witch is dead?
It gives you an idea of how the staff felt about it.
I missed that.
And so, if you ask me, on its face, does the editor of the paper deserve to be fired for an ambiguous, edgy cartoon like that? I would say no. The editor does not deserve to be fired. But that takes that question out of the context of what was going on at the Reader at the time.
As a reader, all I know is, boy, there was a very edgy, provocative cartoon whose frankly meaning I didn't exactly understand.
Aleph's reached out to Kunkel. He says he's not ready to talk yet. He was the guy who broke the Little League story, correct?
Yes. So he's one of my friends. I have to disclose. He's a friend of mine. I think on the cartoon, yes, this was, in and of itself, maybe not a fireable offense, but the things that came out later that maybe it was going to be worse, that he wanted the N-word in the headline, that he was pushing the staff very aggressively, fired the editors, and all of that together, I think, built up to this case. And no, he has not had a chance to respond to any of this. I think
he's had a chance, but
he's chosen not to. I think at some point he will. But yes, he broke the story of the Little League team that was violating the borders and recruiting from outside of its borders.
Jackie Robinson.
The Jackie Robinson team. Yeah. So
John likes him even less now. Look
at that. I was on board with the kids.
It was a crushing story, but all he did was report the truth.
Yeah. It was a story I wish I didn't know.
But it was true.
Exactly. They had to take away their championship trophy, but they broke the rules. I mean,
no, they didn't. The little boys didn't. The adults did.
The coaches, they knew that they were.
I'm ready to relitigate that whole ridiculous Little League fight.
It's the Mincing Rascals time capsule.
I will take this to my grave. Well, but you know, you guys, don't you think we're all sort of in the same business here, that all mainstream media are struggling to find ways to be edgy and connect and be competitive? And I like people who are willing to take chances these days. Robin Baumgarten might have been an example, might not have. I think this is an example of it. And I hate to see people get fired or that energy dismissed because it misfires once in a while, even bad.
Or it offends people. I mean, can we deal with being offended? And I know you want to jump in here.
If we're offended, it's over.
Well, right. I mean, cartooning is supposed to be a huge exaggeration. I do think the Pritzker conversation captured a taking advantage of element of the Democratic Party that goes on routinely. And I think they do take the black vote for granted. And I think they do things that are policies that hurt the black vote. And they divide up black communities through redistricting. They do all kinds of things to undermine, I think, the black community. And that is what that cartoon to me captured.
That's Krista McQuarrie, one of the editorial writers at the Chicago Tribune. And that's the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast. The entire podcast you can hear wherever you subscribe to find our podcast. Just type in The Mincing Rascals. And producer Griffin was pointing out in my ear as we were listening back to that some of the sort of missing points that made more sense and that you were able to hear in the entirety of the podcast. For instance, maybe the biggest sin of that cover of The Reader was that it wasn't clear what the point is. If you're going to say something that's that incendiary or that alarming to people, at least with the imagery, then we ought to know what you're saying. Otherwise, it looks a little gratuitous, or you shouldn't miss the mark with the statements that is that pronounced. And I wasn't exactly sure what he was saying with that. Eric Zorn wasn't either. That's fair enough. And the clip that we played talking about the fashion blogger from Channel 9 really has been seen, this is my understanding, 10 million times around the world. The woman's name is Hoda Kotb. She is the author of a book called Tehran Street Style. And while, I wasn't there, and I don't know exactly what their intent was, I had the sense that the way they set up the interview, they were going to talk about the fashion statement that is, and also the meaning of the hijab and then how Americans react to it. I've had conversations like that with guests on this show before, but it got, I think, much more political than they intended to the point where then there was Larry Podesh asking her about nuclear weapons in Iran. And I'm going to bet that wasn't what they sat down to do that day. Anyway, Mincing Rascals podcast. Thanks, gang. It's 11:24. This is WGN. Don Mattis got the news in about 6 minutes.
Girls, you know you better watch out. Some guys are only about
looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called. 11:39, this is WGN. John Williams here. Domiti, Griffin. Griffin always plays for us on Saturday mornings at this time a song that he thinks we should know or know a little bit more about. This is our Vibe Score segment where Griff runs things. I'm playing the wrong music there, aren't I, Griff? This is where Griffy runs some things by us and then we rate them. Let me get my fancy music here for this. Stand by. Won't be the same if I don't have my fancy music. Shoot. That's not it. Hold on.
Perfectly fine. Gives me more time with my song.
Are you digging this?
Take your time, John.
Wow, I can't find it now. Oh, that's not it.
We don't need it.
I can't do my bit without my music. All right, so Griff, what were we listening to there?
That's Lauryn Hill.
That was really good.
Well, it's a very famous song. This is Lauryn Hill. The song's called Doo Wop, That Thing. It was a huge hit in 1998, 20 years ago. And I was thinking about it because Pitchfork just put out their list of the 50 best albums of 1998. And the album that this is the first track on, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, came in at number 2.
So on a scale of 1 to 100, I'm going to give that one an 87. I thought that sounded awesome. Where are you on that one, Greg?
I give it 100. I love the song.
How about you, Dom?
193.
111 billion.
Yes.
11 billion.
She is my favorite artist of all time, Lauryn Hill is. Oh, man. I met her one time, and I have a really embarrassing picture. I look like a deer in headlights.
How'd you meet her?
Amazing. I was randomly standing outside of a venue in St. Louis. I went to see her at the pageant, and she was just standing outside, and I heard all these stories about her being really mean, and I was scared to approach her. She was like, yeah, sure, take a picture. Hey, nice, good to meet you.
And, and then you look at the picture and go, oh crap, and then you want to go back up to her and go, hey, can we do one where I don't look like this?
Exactly. And it was my birthday. Oh my goodness, I was like, please, can I get in? But by then everyone else noticed it was Lauryn Hill, and there was a small polite mob going on.
So you blew up her spot. You don't go back ask for another picture with Lauryn Hill. There's no way.
No,
that was the only album she put out as a solo artist. It's been 20 years, no follow-up.
Seriously?
Yeah,
I have to think about that. I guess not, huh?
No, I mean, she's been through a lot of different stages and has performed here and there, but she's she's sort of off the grid. But yeah, that was this, their number two album of 1998. Number one was Aquemini by Outkast. And then...
by the way, I have a similar Lauryn Hill story to Domitiz. I saw Lauryn Hill one time. And so she and I got our picture taken. And then I asked her if we could retake it because she didn't look as good as I wanted her to in the picture. And that was embarrassing, but that's just the way these things go sometimes. You don't know what the picture's going to look like.
I do not endorse that fake anecdote. I'll strike it from the record. I'm not comfortable
but
with
it. But it was so perfectly timed and manufactured, I just had to roll with
it. I give my anecdote an 87.
Zero. How dare you?
Give us another thing to rate, Griff. What else is in the news?
Elizabeth Swainy. I don't know if you talked about this on the show during the week. The skier who went up and down the half pipe. At the Olympics, just I don't know how to explain her performance.
It wasn't an Olympic performance. She was on the team and she went down it. Are we talking about the woman who really didn't do it? She just went down it, but she didn't do the half
pipe. She gamed the system to qualify in a country. She's American, but else for some other country. And I guess you can game the system in this way. I didn't realize. With not that, I mean, I couldn't go up and down a half pipe, so she's got some skill, but not enough to qualify as an Olympian in most people's minds.
I'm not even loving the athletes who compete for other countries that aren't really their country. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Sure, sure.
They have qualifications, and maybe it's their ethnicity, maybe it's where they were born. They got to learn the language in some countries, but they do everything they can to qualify in another nation to participate in the games.
So she truly just went up and down the half pipe, did no tricks or any displayed any like notable skill. So here's the question. Let's say zero is this is shameful, embarrassing, disgraceful. How dare you? 100 is that was really funny.
It was fun, and hey, it reminds us that these are games.
And let's just say it was funny. This is my question.
I know. I'm always trying to add to them.
Because that's important.
Okay, but before I think we score this, because Griff, my attitude is that's a 12. I think that's not what the games are about. The games are fun enough, and there's plenty of personality there. We don't need somebody gaming the system.
Certainly not what the games are about, but was it funny?
Oh. So anyway, I just also, in the back of your mind, want you to consider Eddie the Eagle. Remember Eddie the Eagle? He's the guy, I think, from Great Britain who qualified for the ski jump, and he was terrible, and he really shouldn't have been up there.
Yeah, he got a movie made about him.
People loved Eddie the Eagle. I don't know if there's any symmetry here or not, because you didn't ask me if Eddie the Eagle was funny. He was endearing, and he was barely qualified.
Yeah, no one sees this as a feel-good story about how one woman can...
Okay. Was it funny?
One woman with enough money and free time can manipulate a system to get her on TV. And it sounds like she's tried in multiple arenas and in other Olympic sports to do this, and it finally worked.
What was your score for it?
I have a hard time.
Funny, not funny.
The first time I watched the video, I laughed my head off. And then you learn more about it, and it's like, ugh, that's kind of gross and lame. So I'm a 45.
I think I'm closer to John on this one. I think it's like a 15.
Because
it's hilarious, but people...
Oh, don't say that, Domitiz, he'll make that stick.
I know. But people,
it's about was it funny, not was it anything else, Domitiz. You can't be nuanced on this.
That is true. But people take this so seriously. People work their whole lives to get here, and someone made a mockery of it.
That's not funny.
Let's be clear. I'm the one being nuanced here. You're the one that's going to extremes.
Okay. I'm still going to stay with Domitiz, 12. 12.
Yeah, that's fine.
Hey, can we do Johnny Weir and Tara Lipinski
sure.
as announcers?
Yeah.
And, by the way, as announcers, I mean their hair, their clothes, their intelligence, their everything, the whole package. Griffin, go.
95.
Domitiz, do you know who Tara Lipinski and Johnny Weir are?
No idea who these people are.
Give them a 95, Domitiz.
93.
And I say 95. They are awesome.
Yeah, they're
one of
great.
The best things about the Olympics.
They're great.
What else you got for me?
We talked about it with Michael Phillips a little bit, but there are a couple new movies out right now, but it's just going to be another huge weekend for Black Panther. I finally got to see it. Everybody's probably seen it by now.
Yeah.
What did you think? I know you haven't made it yet, though.
Oh, I can give you an opinion on it, though. Don't worry.
Great.
What is your rating on Black Panther, Griffin?
95. Domitiz, did you see it?
100.
Yeah.
95.
It's like me and Lipinski, and I gave a 93 for no reason. He said give a 93 for no reason.
Actually, you know, exactly I'm inclined like not to. Okay, that's me going with the flow, and that's normally how I do it. I don't like comic book movies, so yeah. I can't believe that this thing is as big as it is.
But I don't really either. I mean, I like the good ones, but I don't like most of them. And this is a good one.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a blast.
I'm really interested to see what you think, too, because you gave a really thoughtful Hamilton critique.
Thank you. You're talking about me, right?
Yes.
Thank
yes, you. John. It was against the grain. And sometimes, and you're not a contrarian just for the sake of it.
I really felt what I was saying.
I could tell. And I think you had a good point. And I wonder if there is anything bad you can find in Black Panther. Not bad, but less than magnificent.
But, don't go in like that, though. You know, you're not an inspector looking for all the fun. Like, just enjoy
with
it.
I'm just picturing John with the notepad.
That is not how I... Trust me, when you pay $400 for you and your wife to see a show, you are looking for the good, not right. the bad.
Luckily, <true. laughs> Black Panther won't run you $400. Domitie, did you see it opening night?
I did not see it opening night. I saw it Monday. Okay. There was an after-school program doing a screening, and I went out there with a young mentee of mine and showed him the film.
Oh, so. Nice for you. Yeah. And by the way, Griff, you saw it on opening night?
No, I saw it on Sunday.
How was your crowds, though, guys? Were they just, like, totally into it?
Packed out.
Yeah, on Monday. Yeah, and I saw on Sunday afternoon, so not, but it was definitely sold out, and people, yeah, applause breaks in the middle of the movie.
Isn't that fun?
Oh, it was a blast.
I've only been to a few movies in my life where there were applause breaks in it, and that's kind of you're seeing something special when that happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just the cast is so stacked. It's just fun to see that many movie stars in a scene together, and Michael B. Jordan is like, I just think he's. Gonna be such a he already is a huge star, but like now is he's entering a new phase of like mega movie stardom. I
very
think
true.
Can
and I throw, the fight scenes are amazing.
Yeah
Can I throw one other thing at you guys just to get your quick score on? Did you see the video or picture of Governor Rauner drinking the chocolate milk?
Yes,
he's at a diversity thing at Thompson Center. There's an executive in town, an African-American, who does this. He says, here's the problem with the corporate culture. Here's a glass of white milk. Then he gets out some chocolate syrup. And he asks, usually he said, the highest ranking official there, you know, businessman, which is invariably somebody who looks like Governor Rauner. And then he has them come up and squeeze the chocolate into the white milk. And then they ask them to taste it and say, isn't this better? It's really awkward. It's really clunky. And the when I saw and heard that thing, I just went, oh, no. But it wasn't Rauner's idea. It was this other guy. So he's really got no choice. He's kind of got to go with the flow. As a demonstration of diversity, what do you think of that? I don't even know what my question is exactly.
Give it a vibe score on how awkward it was?
Yeah, well, okay, so zero would be totally awkward. Don't go there, man. And the other one would be, what an enlightening thing. It's perfect. It's awesome. Where are you guys on that one?
John, I got another embarrassing moment. I don't know if you noticed right in the beginning of that clip, there's some news guy holding the microphone up to the guy as he's doing it. That happens to be me.
In a front row seat.
Yes. So, and if you notice, as I saw this demonstration happening, I kind of drift to the background and make him hold his own microphone. And I sit down.
Slowly so backing away from the awkwardness.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it a 50 to remain news neutral.
Fair enough. But I'm feeling what you're feeling there. I think that felt... It wasn't working.
But you got to say this. You heard every word that both of them were saying. Whoever was holding the mic. Oh, wait, that was you. Great job. Fantastic work.
I'm giving it a 22. It just didn't work.
Can I say this really quickly? I know we're up against the clock. Really quickly. That ceremony was actually honoring 12 people who made a tremendous impact in their communities. And it was kind of unfortunate that that story eclipsed the people who are honored and the work they've done. So
it's nice of you to say that, Domitie, and I'm glad you were there. It was the brainchild of a guy who I don't know that well, and I'm sure he does this, and it works well when they do it. It was at a Black History Month at the Thompson Center, and we should remember that this is that. It's 11:51. It's 11:55. Amy Guth just strolled into our Opulent Studios here in the Showcase, downtown Chicago.
Opulent is a word I use to describe this studio often.
I always used to, but it just dawned on me that as we get closer and closer to WGN Radio and the Chicago Tribune's exit from the famed Tribune Tower. Maintenance is not a priority.
Not really at
all. I don't know that. I say barely hanging on as opposed to right. opulent. I just noticed there were some rust stains in the sink downstairs. And I thought, I'll bet in the old days that wasn't there, but it is
sure.
now.
Now it's like, nah, we're
somebody
gonna
else's
go. Someone
rust
else's
stain.
Problem.
What are you doing on your show today?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about J.B. Pritzker's record of promoting women and how whether or not his what he says and what he does quite totally match up. We're going to take a look at the organic movement and some of the regulation and attitudes in there. And then also, it is March is Credit Education Month. So we're going to get a jump start on that and talk with Mark Horner from Fairhaven Wealth Management about
credit's a
credit.
Good thing to have. Credit's a good thing to have.
Indeed. But it becomes a catch-22. Like, you need credit to get credit and all that. So he's good at breaking that down, that kind of stuff for
us. You know, the greatest catch-22 about credit to me is that the people who are the least credit-worthy because they've had financial trouble pay the highest interest rates. High interest rates make it difficult for you to get your finances in order and have a good credit score. Those are the people that we should be giving the lowest interest rates to. I know why we don't, but it would seem to me like it's sort of this vicious circle for them. You know what I mean?
Right. Maybe it isn't like one strike, you're out. You know, maybe you could have a way back or something, make amends with your credit score or something. Well, we'll figure that out. We'll talk with him about that.
Let's you and I pause here. We'll play one more set of commercials, then you'll introduce the news and get rolling on your show.
Sounds like a plan.
Nice to see Amy in the studio. It's 11:57.